Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Public testimony in the House's impeachment inquiry is set to begin tomorrow. People across the country will be able to tune in one way or another. More than 40 years ago, when Congress held public Watergate hearings to look into an alleged cover-up by the Nixon administration, it wasn't as easy to follow along real time. Most folks got their news from nightly newscasts, and here's a little taste of what that sounded like.
Washington has been inundated by another massive set of Watergate transcripts. This stack of documents was distributed by the House Judiciary Committee yesterday to the news media for dissemination this evening.
Evidence in tonight's document shows the president was apprehensive about possible Watergate disclosures less than 2 weeks after the break-in on the Democratic Party headquarters.
Now at last, under oath and in public, James McCord, the one-time security director for the committee to re-elect the president, fleshed out the charges alluded to in his letter to the judge.
That was Roger Mudd, Leslie Stahl, and Sam Donaldson. So with a totally transformed media landscape today, what does that mean for this week's proceedings? How will the public consume the proceedings? How will they resonate with the public today? For more, we turn to Toby Berkowitz. He's a professor of advertising at Boston University and has consulted on political campaigns across the country. Toby, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much.
All right, so I want to start, Toby, with a look back. You heard a little taste there of the coverage of the Watergate hearings. I was really struck by the line from Roger Mudd at the opening where he said, quote, "This stack of documents was distributed by the House committee yesterday to the news media for dissemination this evening." Clearly, there was a middleman and everyone accepted it. How did the way the news was delivered and consumed affect the country's attitude toward those hearings at that time?
Well, people were watching television, and they'd be sitting in front of a television, sometimes with their family, and everyone was sort of glued to it. You didn't have a lot of alternatives for live coverage. You also didn't have the constant punditry that we have now. So it was a very different situation. It was also a different time because that was a major big scandal. We've had lots of scandals and lots of hearings since then.
How does that last part figure in? What is it about? Frankly, we've had so many scandals since then. Tell me more about that.
There have been all sorts of different scandals, and a lot of them have been sort of sexual in nature. The Watergate situation was totally different in that this was now corruption of government. Now we're looking with Trump. Is that what it's going to be this time?
But versus Clinton, which was the sexual one you referred to.
Exactly. There's a big difference between breaking into a national political headquarters and a dress. And so the situation is very different. People now are their own news editors. Everyone is picking, what do I want to read, watch, listen to when I want? That's very, very different. And that's what's going to make this so different from past hearings.
So in 1973, PBS re-aired the Watergate hearings. This is remarkable. In their entirety, in prime time, starting at 8 p.m., which was 51 nights that they did this. The network has said, nope, we're not going to do the same thing this time around for the impeachment inquiry hearings, this public portion. That decision actually led former PBS journalist Bill Moyers to take out a full-page ad in the New York Times saying, please change your plans. Please do it. Is that a loss that we're not going to have that kind of evening primetime airing?
It's not really a loss because anyone can watch the hearings in their entirety whenever they want.
Will
and that's
anyone?
The big I don't know. Journalists certainly will.
I will.
Politicos will. The question really, and this is the most important part, will the civilians, will regular voters be captivated by this, or is it going to be, oh my gosh, please, can I just go back to my reality programming? Oh, wait a minute, we have a reality program president. So the whole landscape has changed so dramatically.
So Toby, how important – so I'm going to ask you a two-part question. First, how important is it for people to consume large chunks at a time of these hearings in order to be able to be truly informed about what's going on? And from a more normative or sort of ethical perspective, should it matter whether or not it's gripping to a citizen to sit down and take in large pieces of this?
Well, I'll answer your second question first. If it's not gripping, there are just too many alternatives and people will have other things that they can do. They can also get how they want the snippet, the punditry on their own whenever they want. I'm sorry if you repeat your first question for
me. So my first question was, in order to be able to participate as citizens, how important is it to consume large chunks at a time of these kinds of hearings?
I don't know if you need large chunks, but you need direct chunks without someone interpreting it for you. And that's going to be the toughest part of all of these hearings is, can anyone just watch, whether it's on their mobile or on their flat screen, without the constant punditry and analysis? And that's just not going to happen. More and more people will get how they perceive this from whoever their favorite pundit is, their favorite analyst, whether it's on talk radio, cable television, the radio, however they want to get it.
So how much does the pundit or the analyst affect what the person thinks about the content they're seeing? I get it if all you get is what the analyst says. You don't watch any of it yourself. But do we have any way of knowing if you have actually consumed the content yourself, how much does the analyst layer affect what you think or how you perceive it?
Probably not too much, because you're going to tune in to the pundit who you want, the analyst who you want. And that's the entire landscape. You can Two people can watch the exact same hearing, and then they're going to go to their own mobile, they're going to go to their own cable, they're going to go to their own streaming, and they're going to get two different versions of what just happened. It's sort of Rashomon played out for the public in politics. Not a very healthy way, I think, for democracy to work.
You know, the more I listen to you, I wasn't thinking about this earlier today, but the more I listen to you, I keep thinking of NFL Red Zone. Now, I don't know if you're an NFL fan. All right, so NFL Red Zone basically is a set of stations where you can tune into a game and only watch the part where somebody might score, basically. So you're not watching the whole game. You're not really understanding what's happening between the teams, et cetera. There are those who are like, awesome, I can only watch the parts that interest me. And others who say you're missing something fundamental about the game if you don't actually watch it. Do we miss something fundamental about the game here if we only watch the Red Zone segments?
Sure. What you're missing is the process. You're missing the depth. You're missing what someone else might think is important. And that's the problem. What you're going to see in the Red Zone is that sound bite, whether it's a congressperson jumping up and down or whoever is testifying. So it's a highlight reel, but you're not seeing, if you want to use a bad metaphor again, you know, the football players who are blocking for the quarterback. You're just watching that touchdown.
I think we can both agree that my Red Zone was a bad metaphor. But
no, I don't know. Not too bad.
So to use another one that is distasteful, but I think appropriate, let's talk about the theater of this, right? We've already heard or seen much of the testimony that we're going to see in the next few weeks in written form. A lot of it's come out. So presumably what's important next is how it's going to be delivered firsthand by the people who give it. And that's going to be done under even higher pressure. So how important is the performance in how people will perceive the import and the outcome?
Go back to Watergate, John Dean. It was the content, what he said, but it was also how he said it. So I think it's both of these things. But we also have to look at—
Now, I'm going to stop you there. Explain for people who are listening who didn't see how John Dean said it. How did he say it, and why was that important?
He spoke very directly with sort of a semi-baritone, which I don't do a very good impression of. But it was just very precise, very unemotional, and exceedingly detailed. And that was very different from what people were expecting. The one other part of performance that you have to look at are the people in the Congress, in the Senate. And that was a huge part of Watergate, the Sam Ervins, the Thompsons, the Sam Dashes. And then by the time we got to the House, the Peter Rodinos. Compare Rodino to Adam Schiff. It's a whole different world.
Why?
Because Rodino was much more straightforward. Of course, he's a politician. He's from New Jersey. But he saw himself as a congressperson first, and it was part of the House. Now it's all partisan. And so for everybody, the Republicans, the Democrats, the House, the Senate. And so Rodino sort of stepped away from the partisanship to some degree, as much as that was possible.
So I also want to talk about the relevance of these public hearings. A Gallup poll found that 71% of the American public watched the Watergate hearings live. And they had a real impact. People changed their minds or began to. And this was before the Supreme Court ordered Nixon to turn over his tapes, before the Saturday Night Massacre. According to Gallup, after the hearings, 53% of people viewed Watergate as a serious matter, up from 31%. Today, will any of this move anyone, or are people already locked in their camps?
I think people are absolutely locked in their camps, but a big surprise, a major development on either side could end up all of a sudden shifting maybe the 5 to 10 to 15% who might be persuadable one way or another. And that's really, as these hearings go on, that's what to look for. Not what the partisans are doing, because they're already baked in. But what about what might be considered sort of the swing voters, people whose minds might be made up and might change?
Toby, is there any way for the country to come through this process unified, or at least not less unified than the country is today, this minute?
No, that's very doubtful. These are exceedingly partisan hearings, which, by the way, is what impeachment is. Impeachment is a political process, and people have to understand that. It's just going to reinforce everything more and more and more, unless something happens that is so dramatic that just totally changes the game. But we've seen Trump manage to slip away time and time again from what people thought was going to change the game. And yet, like the Energizer Bunny, he just sort of keeps going on.
And last word, what should people be looking for these next couple of weeks, watching for?
What people should watch for is there a real revelation that both sides agree is in fact a fact? And what we've seen all along is what seems to be a fact. Each side says, no, that's not a fact. It's a fake fact. Is there anything that people will agree on that's going to be seen in these hearings?
Well, on that note, that's Toby Berkowitz, Boston University advertising professor and political media consultant. Toby, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
That's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR. We are Boston's NPR news station. I'm Tiziana Deering. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.